Good evening and welcome to Enemy Within. It's Friday the 28th of August and this is peoplesinternetradio.com where we are seeking solutions. And tonight I've got a gentleman who I stumbled across, in fact one of my previous guests put me onto him, who is certainly seeking solutions and he seems to have found solutions to an awful lot of health problems. I'd like to welcome to People's Internet Radio, Andrew Fletcher. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, Andy. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
No, we're seeking solutions and it appears you've got some. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you've found out, please?
Yeah, I have an engineering background and I'm a bit of a lateral thinker, so you know, I tend to think sideways. And finding solutions to problems is something I've done all my life, really. So I made the mistake of having a look how trees circulate sap. And I read a wholly inadequate explanation. And it took me 20 minutes to solve the problem. But I won't bore you with that. I'd like to tell you a little bit about...
Well,
about
just on the sap thing, we've got... when I was at school, they always taught me it was capillary reaction that did that.
Rubbish.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like so many things they teach you at school, isn't it?
Osmosis, rubbish. The cohesion tension theory, rubbish. Root pressure, rubbish. What really happens is the trees evaporate all of the water through the leaves, or 98% of the water goes through the leaves. And evaporated water doesn't contain any salts or sugars, but the leaves produce sugars, and the liquid, the sap, contains dissolved nutrients from the soil. So by evaporating 98% of the water from the leaves, you actually concentrate the sap by 98%. Now, you would have thought that that would have been pretty obvious to most people. It's impossible to boil water away without concentrating whatever's left behind. So that gives us a denser solution at the top of the tree. Its gravity dictates will move down towards the sink. That sink can be a fruit, or it can be the trunk, or it can be down to the roots. So any sap that makes it down to the roots is generating a tension on the return flow. So the downflow is causing a return flow. So long as the upward flowing fluid is always more dilute than the downward flowing fluid, we have the tree circulating sap. It doesn't and never has needed to lift water to its leaves. All it has to do is circulate it. So by causing the downward flow, it creates tension in the xylem, and that tension spreads back out through the roots into the soil water and pulls all of the water back towards the tree. So that then incoming water re-dilutes the sap and it then flows back up the tree. So a flowing down driven by evaporation and gravity, and the return flow driven by the downward flow.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Thank you.
So would you like to tell us how you've actually applied that in seeking your solution?
Well, I set up an experiment, first of all, down at Brixham Cliffs to test the theory. It was 6 millimetre bore plastic tubing, which I strung up a cliff, and the tubing measured 48 metres, and the centre of the tube was raised up the cliff. It was filled with boiled water to degas it, and then two open ends were put into two bottles, and at the centre of the tube, I added 10 millilitres of salt solution, coloured with food dye. So as it was raised up the cliff, which incidentally the laws of physics say is not possible, they say it can only go to 10 metres. Well, and we had Forestry Commission scientists there and journalists. And as it got to the 24 metres, not only did the sap or the water stay inside the plastic tube, which was 6 millimetre bore, but the downward flow created a return flow. So we could see one damage on overflowing and the other damage on going down, which meant 10 millilitres of salt solution lifted thousands of times its own volume up to 24 metres. And then I thought, wow, here we have a non-living physical force that makes things live. And I thought, wow, that's big. Then that must apply to any vessel that stands above ground level and evaporates water from a higher point, such as a tree. And I thought, bloody hell, we're also trees. You know, our lungs are like branches. Mm-hmm. In fact, they're called branches. You know, there's branches in the lungs. And, you know, it looked like an upside-down tree. And I thought, well, if we evaporate water from our lungs, we'll also change the density of whatever supplies that water we've evaporated. So I deduced that as the blood flows through the lungs, it gets denser because it donates the water from it to feed the lungs to evaporate the water that we breathe out. So every breath we take out, it's like applying a pinch of salt to the main arterial tree. So we breathe out, and then that denser blood goes back through the heart, and then the heart injects it back into the main artery. So if we're the right way around, gravity can pull on those density changes and actually assist the circulation and pull that denser blood down towards the kidneys, providing we're standing up or on an incline. So the downward flow is stimulated, so we get an increase in arterial pressure, but an equal decrease in venous pressure. Because, again, like the trees, we're applying tension and lowering the pressure in the venous return. And to test this, we raised our bed 15 centimetres or 6 inches higher at the head end. And I observed the way water flowed through a loop of tubing to arrive at the optimum level. So I had a closed loop of tubing, again, filled with water, with coloured salt solution where the pillar is, raised the bed. And when we got to about 4 inches, then the downward flow and the return flow was happening in the same side of the tube. So there was no overall circulation that represented the arterial flow and the venous return. Mm-hmm. So when I raised the bed a little bit higher, then we got the downward flow in the one side and the return flow in the opposing side. So we created our own circulation without a heart. And that's very profound, because we've all had an egg for breakfast, yeah? And hopefully there's no heart beating in it when we crack open that egg.
I've not come across one yet.
And yet that heart forms. So circulation took place long before the heart beated. Yes. So the egg, being elliptical, can only be rotated across one axis. Mm-hmm. And we know from battery farms they need to rotate the eggs, else the chicks don't form. Yeah. So as the eggs rotated, the food is dragged down through the albumen and it's rotated again. So we start to stimulate that primary circulation, a downflow and a return flow. And in fact, I think they call it the primary blast in an egg, in a developing embryo, looks exactly like my experiment of bricks and clips. So we have a downflow and a return flow. And I thought, this is amazing. Anyway, we tilted our bed, and back in 1995, so I've been at this 20 years. Uh-huh. And within 4 weeks, my wife's varicose vein went flat. And I thought, hang on. The medical profession say raise your legs, and here we've done the opposite, and her varicose vein had gone flat. But at the same time, we got a nurse called Stephanie Ness, who also tilted her bed, and in 4 weeks, her varicose vein went flat again. So 2 out of 2, that's looking pretty conclusive. And of course, if you've applied tension to the blood, as I say you have, and you've lowered the pressure in the veins, then what you've done is you've done the opposite that caused the vein. See, when we're lying on a flatbed, the heart's pounding away, it's a pump. Mm-hmm. So it can't inflate the arteries because they can withstand a positive pressure inside the arteries. They're designed to do that. But when we're relying solely on the heart to get the fluids around the body or the blood around the body, then that means that it's inflating the veins because you're just relying solely on the heart, and the heart's a pump. So it's forcing the blood around, and that's causing the veins to bulge. But when we tilt the bed, we're now relying on the density changes caused by the lungs, and that changes the whole system completely. What it does is it lowers the pressure in the veins and adds tension to the blood in the veins, both of which pull the veins in. Now, if you get a person with edema or swollen legs, again, the medical profession say, raise your legs. Well, that's great because it shifts the fluid back up to the upper torso. And then when they stand up again, he goes straight back to the feet. So you've not actually solved the problem. But if you've changed the pressure, because the edema is caused by the pressure in the veins being greater than the pressure in the surrounding tissue, muscle tissue and skin. So if you've changed the pressure, you've lowered the pressure in the veins, then the fluids migrate from the surrounding tissue back into the venous return. They whip around the circulatory system and then excrete it in the urine.
Uh-huh.
So, again, to test this, we measured the density of our urine to see if it changed. And what we found was that an inclined bed raised the density of our urine. So just using a simple hydrometer, if anyone's made their own brew or alcohol, that's the type of hydrometer we used. And we deduced that the inclined bed increased the density of the urine output over and above normal daily activity and over and above horizontal bed rest and indeed head down bed rest. And the other thing we did was to test the opposite. So we slept with our head down and our feet up. We had a problem with that because we both got diarrhea. So our digestive system wasn't working very well. People have used it as a weight to help people lose weight.
I never noticed that, but I slept in caravans quite a lot when I was younger. I used to be a mechanic for a motorbike racing team. We'd go all over Europe sleeping in caravans. And if we couldn't get the caravan level, I found that if I slept with my head down, I always got a headache.
Yes, yes, yes. And in fact, most of the campers will deliberately try to pitch the tent on a slight incline. And if we lie on the beach, we're also on an incline. And we find it really comfortable.
Uh-huh. I don't know if this is jumping the gun slightly, but I told you that we've got a smart lot in the chat room here. And Unique Lee, who's on later tonight at 11, has put in there was an assumption that cot deaths, in inverted commas, were attributed to not turning a child as if it were an egg regularly. Something linked to the Earth's magnetic field and the baby's orientation in relation to it. Interesting premise, I thought.
Very interesting indeed. In fact, I had a meeting with Dr. Shireen Chandler she was the senior research advisor for the Foundation for Sudden Infant Death, which is now called the Lullaby Trust. Mm-hmm. And I showed her my experiments at her home in London. And she said, "My God," she said, "I think you've solved it." I said, "What do you mean by that, Dr. Chandler?" She said, "I think you've solved sudden infant death syndrome by inclining the beds." And, of course, I thought I'd done enough then. The mm-hmm. charity would be all over me like a rash, wanting to conduct studies. But, in fact, I found the opposite. They said I needed to get a university involved. And, of course, the universities are following the books. Yes. And they don't want somebody from the outside telling them that, you know, they got it wrong. So it's just a vicious circle. And they say their excuse is that they can't fund anyone to conduct a study outside of the universities. So it's a catch-22. You know, we're not going to move forward like that. So I feel a little bit gutted that, you know, we have the answers here and no one's done anything about it. It's very sad.
When it's acknowledged by someone supposedly that knowledgeable that you've cured the problem, to not do anything about it, to me, patently shows the flawed system that we've got. It appears that the education of doctors and health professionals is funded by the very people who are making a profit out of keeping people ill.
Yes.
As Lee calls it, the National Harm Service.
Yes. Well, funnily enough, the movement to put babies flat on the backs has caused flattened head syndrome. So we've got lots of babies now that have got misshaped heads, thanks to the Lullaby Trust and the other charities that were involved in this rather ridiculous assumption that we should sleep in one position. Mm-hmm. So your caller's right. You know, we should rotate. And, you know, a lot of people have said, "Oh, I've got an electric bed, and it does exactly the same as you're proposing." And I'm saying, "Well, actually, no, it doesn't, because if you've raised your upper torso, you're sitting." Mm-hmm. According to Joan Vernikos from NASA, she was the former head of life sciences. She made a video called "Sitting Kills." So, you know, if we're in the wrong posture, you know, we're going to cause problems, and those electrical beds. Well, my mother threw hers out because she found them so uncomfortable. And if you're bent in the middle, you can't rotate, you can't lie on your side because your hips are not designed to do that.
No.
So you're stuck in one position. You know. So, all right, our schools are too hard to get the flathead syndrome when we get on a bit. But it is rather ridiculous that we've arrived at this situation. And I think it's... I'm not sure, but I think it's 3 out of 5 babies have got flathead syndrome as a result of that advice.
Really?
Yeah. I have a friend locally who's got that problem, so, yeah.
And that's a recognised medical syndrome now?
Yes, it is, yeah. But I also, during my work, I found this doctor. I've lost the paper, but he said in all of his years as a practice GP, he never had a single case of cot death or crib death. Wow. And he advised every mother in his catchment area to tilt the beds. Yeah.
So this is knowledge that you, or this is information that you've come across, you've worked out for yourself. But it appears that it's not something entirely new, is it?
No, not at all. It's been around for 5,000 years, to my knowledge.
Mm.
When they pulled the beds out of the ancient Egyptian tombs, okay, they were grave robbers, so they weren't too particularly bothered about the furniture.
No.
They were more interested in the gold and the jewels. But nobody, they all missed the real jewel in the crown, and that was, why were all these beds inclined? You know, even Tutankhamun had a camping bed which he took everywhere with him, and it folded out to an inclined bed.
Wow.
Why didn't someone say? And these people were involved in brain surgery. There's papyruses about their involvement in spinal cord injury. Mm. So they were doing surgery 5,000 years ago and getting success, I should imagine.
Absolutely.
And even the workers that were building the pyramids, they had little mud beds, and those mud beds were all inclined as well. So it wasn't just the pharaohs that were sleeping on an inclined bed. And yet they're there in the museums for everyone to look at, and they are the real elephant in the room.
Mm.
No one has realised what they're looking at.
Well, when Lee made that early remark, I asked him if he'd been looking at your website. He said no, it was just something he remembered reading about when he was delving into this field, i.e. vaccines, vitamin C, etc. He's saying about the National Harm Service, perhaps play with the words a bit, maybe the Irration Service. And he's also saying that sudden infant death syndrome can be eradicated by using small doses of ascorbic acid. From my knowledge, is vitamin C, isn't it?
It's vitamin C, but I would say that you can drink as much vitamin C as you want, but if you sleep on that flat bed, it's going to do you in.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, without a doubt. I have a little bit of a memo here to try and keep me on track and stop me waffling on too much. See where we got to. Well, it's taken me 20 years. Now, this is really interesting because I did a world service program for BBC, and that was back in 1995 or 96. And the object of the world service program was to get the message out that people with AIDS could actually benefit from avoiding a flat bed and sleeping inclined, because a flat bed, you know, if you're prolonged bed rest, you can actually induce the same symptoms that someone with full-blown AIDS has got. You know, you can get multiple organ failure, you know, deconditioning, chronic diarrhea, skin deconditioning, you know. And it's in the literature. There's tons and tons of information in the literature stating that lying on a flat bed is probably the worst thing that we can do, and yet we still do it. In fact, the hospitals are measured on how many of these flat beds they've got. You know, fortunately, things have a way of turning around, and this guy has contacted me, and I'm in awe, actually, because it's one off my bucket list. He's got a 65-year-old lady with AIDS, full-blown AIDS, at the end of the line. She's lost tremendous amount of weight. She's virtually skin and bones. Her skin is dull and grey. She's gone deaf. She's got organs packing up. There's nothing that can be done for this. If anybody's aware of, you know, the end life of full-blown AIDS, it's quite horrendous. And, they tilted the bed 2 months ago, and it's been incredible, absolutely incredible. I'm overwhelmed, to be honest. Her skin has gone back to being normal colour. She's put on loads of weight. Organs have started to function better. She's no longer got a problem with diarrhoea because she's gaining weight. And her hearing has come back. That's not bad for 2 months, is it?
From someone who, before they started that, you might have expected to have passed away. That's just absolutely astounding. You know.
Well, we noticed, because I've been at this 20 years, that people that were on an inclined bed didn't seem to be getting affected by influenza and all the coughs and colds that were going around as much as other people. Yeah, we still got them.
Yeah.
But we seem to get over them a lot quicker. So our immune system seems to have benefited, you know, and I thought, wow, this could help so many people. In fact, when the Ebola crisis was about, I tried my utmost to contact these people and say, look, for heaven's sake, don't put these patients on a flat bed. You know, tilt the bed, and, you know, there's a good chance they can survive. But, of course, they want to keep dishing out these drugs, and the drugs apparently are killing more people with AIDS and in fact might even be responsible for AIDS.
Than leaving
the drugs alone, you know. Mm. So there's another lady I've just learned about as well who's helping people with AIDS by giving them lemon and honey, and she's having results with that. So
incredible.
You know, could it be a dietary thing? You know, could it be the fact that they're grinding up maize and they're on a very poor diet that's leading them to, you know, have a meltdown?
Very possible. I mean, since I came across your work, and that was thanks to Big Dave, who was on with us a couple of weeks back, he recommended me to have a look at it because I've got a spinal problem myself. I fell off a house when I was 19 years old, landed on my tailbone. I was 6'2" then, and I'm now about 5'9½". So my spine is not what you call straight. For many years I've been taking very high doses of morphine, and then after about 10 years I went to the local pain clinic, and this gentleman there examined me, made me shout quite a bit, and said, yes, high dose of morphine for 10 years is not really good for you.
No.
So he then put me on this stuff called pregabalin, which, well...
Did it send your toes back?
It didn't send my toes black, but it just felt like I was living in a constant fog. You know, I didn't know what day it was. I was falling asleep. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't read. I couldn't do anything. I was just a complete zombie. And I've been trying various different things to help me out. And I've kind of got away from that as much as I possibly can. But it's, you know, you try and explain to doctors what you're doing, they look at you like you're mad, and, oh, you know, you mustn't do that. I mean, I know certain medical conditions my partner's got, the advice she's been given, when you look at the science behind the advice, it's completely upside down and back to front.
Yeah. What I like is the assumption that gravity is the weakest force. I actually roll the floor when I hear that. You know, we've got a force that drives every planet in the solar system. You know, it cooks the sun, that gives us light. It carves out river valleys, throws up mountains everywhere, and yet it's the weakest force. No, I don't buy that. I don't buy that at all. You know, they say that the magnetic force is stronger because if you hover a magnet over a paperclip, it'll lift it off the Earth's surface. That's bloody ridiculous. So if you put the magnet on the floor for a minute and put your piece of paper on the floor and then lift the magnet up, you know, I bet you that gravity will overcome that piece of paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've got the way they've come to that conclusion is they've stacked all the odds in favour of the magnet. Well, actually, the magnet was made here on Earth, and gravity is responsible for the magnet. Gravity is responsible for the person holding the magnet, and it's gravity is responsible for causing the leverage in your arm that raises the magnet. So you know, he can get the most powerful electric magnet on the planet and stick a piece of paper under it and it's done for. He won't shift it.
That's amazing, because I was actually looking at an experiment this week, I think it was online, and it was a gentleman who used to work for, I think it was Lockheed Skunk Works or one of those places, and he was talking about magnetism, gravity and the connection between them. And how he demonstrated this was he got two rocks and he hollowed them out. And inside one rock, he put two neodymium magnets that were pushed together with like poles, which are obviously going to repel. And then inside the other one, he got them north to south, which is how they normally attract. And he put these rocks back together, dropped them off a house. And the one with the opposing magnet dropped significantly slower. And you did it against a control rock on both sides. The one with the north to south dropped faster than the normal rock.
Oh, dear.
So
That's one for Galileo, yeah?
In essence, the opposing magnetic poles seem to have some kind of anti-gravity effect, which is quite bizarre. I mean, the guy's actually died now. There's a gentleman called Boyd Bushman. He made some fascinating comments for his death.
Wow, that's incredible. Yeah, I'd never come across that before.
Mm. I'll let you, if I can find the video, I'll let you. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. As for anyone that's thinking of having a bash at the inclined bed, there's very many ways, you know, that you can achieve it. simply a furniture razor or a bed razor from eBay. Mm-hmm. That'll cost you about 10 quid, including the postage. Make sure that they're 15 centimetres or 6 inches higher. If they're slightly smaller, you can put a piece of wood under them, so it's not a problem. Or you can use blocks of wood, make your own blocks for under the bed frame. Or some lady, Terry Munich Harrison, she used plastic tubing, you know, the strong plastic tubing we get for pipe work from the builder's merchants.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So she cut those to the right length and dropped the metal legs of a bed inside the plastic tube, which I thought was ingenious.
Oh, that's again, brilliant, yeah.
The cost for that is nothing. Anybody that's thinking of using books under the bed, make sure you use medical books, because I think they're all going to be rewritten anyway. Two 3-inch bricks, a couple of breeze blocks. You know, that's about the right height. If you want to get a little bit more technical, you can make your actual bed frame. Those are very easy. We've put some methods on the website. That's inclinebedtherapy.com. Or you can adapt your own bed, as I did, a wooden frame. I made a video showing how I did this. And just by altering the runners on the side of the frame and chopping the ends off the bed at an angle, the end of the side frames at an angle. And then I had to put a wedge in the middle of the bed to support the centre because it's a king size. But I made a good job of it for very little money. In fact, I think I did it for free. I'd be very surprised if I spent any money, to be honest.
I haven't tried it yet, but I'm going to do tonight because I've been sawing up an old length of wood that I found today.
Yeah,
and I've got my bed propped up. The other half was a bit concerned about the 6 inches, worried she'd slide out the bottom of the bed and all this. So we've gone 3 inches to start with, which I think you do recommend, don't you?
Yeah, for something.
We've gone three inches.
If you're pretty healthy, just go for the whole lock.
Right. Yeah. Oh, we were both absolute wrecks, so...
Oh, right.
Starting okay. Gently. I mean, how long would we go with the 3 inches before you change to the six?
Got a couple of weeks. Right. You know, 3 weeks, if you like. No hard and fast rules. Well, I mean, here we are, the whole human race, which, you know, it is the most intelligent species on the planet and actually stands the most vertical, which can't be a coincidence. So we've actually benefited from being upright. I think it's altered our intelligence, but not altered it enough to question how we sleep. So if you ask yourself, who designed the flat bed that you sleep on and what were their qualifications to do so? You know, who comes to the conclusion that we should sleep on a flat bed? Was it done just to pacify the wife, you know, because it looks neater when it's level? You know, was that why we did it? But what does history tell us about, you know, how we used to sleep? We've already discussed the ancient Egyptians, but mm-hmm. In ancient Constantinople, the hospitals excelled in medicine and health. They were renowned for, you know, for producing great results. And there's a painting on the internet that shows all of the beds in the hospital had inclined.
Wow, the clues are there then, if you know where to look.
Yes. In fact, there are babies swaddled in a manger. Now, we've all heard that story, haven't we?
I've heard it somewhere.
But they're swaddled in a manger and they're on an incline. And there's photographs of those on the internet as well, or paintings on the internet.
Yeah, you know, I believe I've seen ones like that, yeah. Well, yeah.
But one interesting thing I come across... I asked a Boston Museum curator to measure an ancient Egyptian bed, an inclined bed. She went out there with a tape measure, bless her. And she said it's 6 inches higher at the head end. They arrived at exactly the same angle that I had by observing how circulation occurred in a loop of tubing. Did they do the same experiment?
I suppose it's a good possibility. Sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
So how did they know? That's incredible. But also, if we go back to the sweating sickness, the Tudor period, it killed millions and millions of people. Often we've talked about the immune system. But what they found was that they hadn't got any penicillin in those days. Well, they probably got some mouldy bread, but they didn't realise what it was used for.
No.
But they found that if they placed two guards by the side of the bed, they survive. Now, normally, if they got that sweating sickness, they'd be dead by morning, which was fascinating. Again, they arrived at the solution by realising that if they lay down, they die. And if they kept them sitting up, perhaps, they survived.
I mean, I believe for a long time that we're told that we're the pinnacle of human endeavour and achievement. I'm firmly convinced that there are societies, civilizations, whatever you want to call them, in ancient history who had certainly as much knowledge and possibly way more, because they seem to have done things that we can't do now, like, for the want of being boring, building those pyramids as accurately. Apparently we couldn't do that now.
Yes, that's incredible. I just need to mention something. I got sidetracked. I know, when I was talking about the density of urine, and we measured the density of urine sleeping flat, standing up, and actually lying with the head down and on the incline, what we found was pretty remarkable. When we slept head down, our urine density went down to water level density. In other words, the kidneys weren't functioning. So those toxins were building up in the body while we were sleeping head down, and that's why you got your headache.
Wow.
So I needed to say that, just in case anybody thought that I'd missed any important.
So if you did that on a regular basis, would that cause kidney failure?
Well, yeah, I reckon it would. You know, I reckon it would cause problems, yeah. Wow. Yeah, it's NASA are paying $17,000 for patients to sleep head down, because what they've realised is that sleeping head down ages the body 10 times faster than normal bed rest and normal daily activity. And the astronauts in space, where you took gravity away, they also age 10 times faster. They get decalcification of the bones, the heart atrophies, muscles in the body atrophy away, and the nervous system begins to break down. They get visual disturbances. They get problems with the skin thinning out, like we're, you know, old age pensioners. And these are people in their peak of fitness. Hair starts falling out. Their immune system starts to deteriorate. They get psoriasis and other skin conditions. You know, so they literally fall in apart because you took gravity away. And NASA have realized, well, hang on, you know, it's a bit expensive sending these people to study how they fall apart. We'll get some patients in, pay them $17,000 to keep the mouth shut, and we'll see how they break down. you couldn't make it up, could you?
No, it's incredible. Well, I've just noticed we've been going 40 minutes there, Andrew. Are you about ready for a break and have a cuppa, and we'll play a quick tune?
That sounds a good idea.
I've just got the jam lined up there. That's only 2.5 minutes, so I'll play a couple. So we'll be about 5 minutes and we'll be back, folks. And welcome back to Enemy Within on peoplesinternetradio.com this Friday evening. And we're chatting away with Andrew Fletcher. But first, I just need to mention that here at PIR, we're having a few problems with the chat room. I believe it's some kind of server problem. So anyone who is not able to get into the chat room and would like to, there is a temporary chat room set up, and you need to go to podcaststorage.weebly.com. And there's a temporary chat room there, Chatwing chat room, so you can sign into that and join in the chat, pose any questions you may have to Andrew. And also, on that subject, we are entirely supported by listener donations here at People's Internet Radio. None of us get anything for doing this. We all do it for the love of it. So if you could possibly spare a few quid to help us keep the wheels turning, then if you look on the site and just below the radio player button, there's a donate button in there. And if you could chip in a few pounds, or if you've got a few hundred to spare and you don't like what I'm saying, put that in there and specify it, and I'll have a couple of weeks off. But other than that, we'll get back to Andrew and his fascinating information. Andrew. Oh, because I've got music playing in the background. That's better.
Yeah, so, you know, if you've just joined, we've been discussing how simply tilting your bed can have a profound effect on your health. And we all sleep on a flat bed for no other reason than somebody decided we should sleep flat, who probably hasn't got a medical qualification to his name. And yet here we are in 2015, and no one's bothering to question why we're all sleeping on a flat bed. Most of us will die in our sleep. So, you know, that... They don't call it the deathbed for anything, any other reason. You know, it's killing us. And we have lots of people that go to bed for a good night's sleep and wake up in the morning feeling like they've done 10 rounds with Rocky Marciano. You know, look at all their eyes. They're all puffed up in the morning. Look like two Jaffa oranges with slits in. I visited my son and his daughter. My granddaughter and his missus. And we knocked on the bedroom, on the door early in the morning. And they come to the door one after another, and they all got these huge puffy eyes. Even my granddaughter had got puffy eyes. Right. And we gave them our bed. We said, "Look, you know all about my work. Why on earth are you sleeping on a flat bed?" So we gave them the bed, and the next time we visited, puffy eyes had gone.
Wow.
So, you know, that there should tell people. Even these women, you know, they spend fortunes on cosmetics, trying to look beautiful and trying to slow down the aging process. And here we've got something here that can actually help you, and it doesn't cost anything. The sloping bed, by the way, is used, the doctors recommend it for respiratory conditions, pneumonia, bronchitis, GERD, if you're in America, or GORD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease. That's also used for babies when they've got the same problems. They tilt the cots then. It would be interesting to find out if the babies on these tilted cots ever died of cot death. I don't think that they would. So the question is then, is how safe is your flat bed? Now, at 3:30 a.m., the common time that people die, this is the same time that the body temperature drops by 2 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this drop in temperature, it doesn't occur when the bed's tilted, i.e. raised 6 inches or 15 centimetres at the head end. So I suspect that having our body temperature drop at this crucial time is indicative that the circulation has slowed down, and both of these things allow pathogens to take hold of our body. So I reckon that's the time when we surrender to whatever viruses and bacteria we're carrying, or whatever are in our environment and surrounding us. But the doctors have known for many years that flatbeds are killing us. You know, they're killing patients, and yet they've still got the patients on flatbeds. But Einstein wrote, insanity is to keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting to get different results.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So another doctor puts it in plainer words, leaving no one in any doubt as to the dangers of bed rest. And this was in 1942. He wrote this, Dr. Richard Asher. The dangers of bed rest. Look at the patient lying alone in bed. What a pathetic picture he makes. The blood clotting in his veins, the lime draining from his bones, the scabula stacking up in his colon, the flesh rotting from his seat, the urine leaking from his distended bladder, and the spirit evaporating from his soul. Teach us to live that we may dread unnecessary time in bed. Get people up and we may save patients from an early grave.
What, there's a few clues in there, isn't there?
There certainly is.
Wow.
And in fact, you know, my research took me back to Hippocrates, and during which I also found out about nurses and doctors that remove pillars from terminally ill patients. In fact, I was sitting by the side of a lady's bed, and I watched the nurses, come in, take away the pillars that were actually functioning as pillars, and replacing them with pillars that were there just for show. The head went straight flat down to the level with the mattress. Within 5 minutes, that lady passed away. But she had cancer, and I actually believe what they did was the right thing to do. You know, I mean, it's even written up in the medical ethics literature, the Jewish medical ethics literature. It's written that it is forbidden to remove the pillars from a patient who is terminally ill to hasten their deaths. You can't get it. So they know these flatbeds are killing us. What I found also was the heart rate and respiration rate that changes when you're on an inclined bed. Mm-hmm. Your heart rate decreases by 10 to 12 beats per minute, and your respiration rate decreases by 4 to 5 breaths per minute. To make sure that it wasn't a fluke, I tested it on 3 sleeping bull terriers, and the same happened to them. Exactly the same reductions as they slept on an inclined bed and slept flat.
Wow. That's...
Yeah. So that can be tested by the medical profession. And in fact, it was tested at Derriford Hospital. My son was recovering from an accident and broke his wrist in two places. And we tilted his bed in the... because they'd got him head down. And I went down to the recovery room and said, why have you got my son head down? And they said, well, it's in case he's sick. You know, it'll stop him choking on his own vomit. I said, well, have you considered that you might be making him sick by having him upside down? And she said, no, she hadn't. Wow. I said, anyway, I'll predict something. I said, if you raise the head of his bed 6 inches higher than his feet, his heart rate will decrease by 10 to 12 beats per minute, his respiration by 4 to 5 beats per minute, his oxygen sats will go up, and he'll recover very quickly. She said, well, he should be out for about another 15 to 20 minutes. She tilted his bed, and he came round straight away, put his thumb up and says, I'm all right, Doc. And she went bananas. She said, my God, she said, this alone could save the NHS a fortune, speeding up recovery rates after surgery. You know, and she went up to see my wife in the ward and she said, your husband's a genius. She said, what he's just shown me down in the recovery room is incredible. She said, you know, if we adopt this, it's going to save us all money and save lives. But, you know, that was the last we heard of that.
Yes, I just got a question from Laurie in the chat room. Laurie's the lady with the big stick who keeps us all in order in the chat room. And she's asking, has the guest heard of Liverpool Care Pathway?
Oh, yes. That's just been alienated now. They're actually pulling it out. What it involves is starving people and taking away the water and literally speeding up their deaths. You know, but there are patients that have been killed this way. You know, I mean, some of them were getting so desperate, they were actually drinking out the vase with the flowers in.
Oh, crikey.
Yeah, I mean, it's all happened. So I'm fully aware of that, and thank God that they're actually getting rid of it now. You know, it has no place in medicine.
No, well, the trouble is, what we're told is medicine is run by the pharmaceutical. And there's a lot of money to be made out of pain and suffering.
Oh, yes, you don't want cures. No, if you're selling drugs, you won't repeat business. The same if you're operating on varicose veins. You don't want somebody to come along and say, stick two blocks of wood under your bed and you don't need to operate on me.
Yes, patient cured is a customer lost.
Well, I had a meeting with Professor Ed Zard Ernst. I don't know whether anybody knows Professor Ed Zard Ernst, but he used to run the alternative therapies and medicines in Exeter. But his real job, I suspect, was to make sure that they never saw the light of day. And I had a meeting with him and some German doctors and showed him my experiments. And he wrote back to me saying they were truly fascinated, you know, and they'd like to help me conduct a study. But in order to conduct a study into varicose veins and edema, I needed to see this doctor. I won't mention his name, although I should mention his name, but I won't. Mm-hmm. And they arranged an appointment. The reason I had to see him was because he could give us access to people with varicose veins for a study.
Yeah.
I thought, great, you know, I've cracked this, because as soon as they start taking photographs, we can have concrete evidence. And I got to the office, knocked on the door, walked in, and this doctor looked at me. And however I kept my hands off him, I don't know. But he said, are you Mr. Fletcher? I said, yes. He says, I want to make one thing clear. I want nothing to do with you, your theory, or your experiments, or any study. Do I make myself clear? I said, oh, yeah, absolutely clear. I walked away. Yeah. Well, he realised, didn't he, that, you know, hang on, if this guy's got something that works, it could affect my bottom line, yeah?
Yeah, he's going to be out of a job, or certainly buying his Ferrari a little further away.
Yeah. Well, I contacted NASA a few times to alert them about this important discovery. And on one occasion, NASA called me to ask how the degenerative effects of astronauts during long-term spaceflight could be mitigated. My reply was that the slowly rotating centrifuge on board might assist the circulation. Now, long-term spaceflight away from the Earth's gravitational influence, however, would prove fatal to astronauts. So the idea of sending astronauts to the Mars is a fantasy.
Yeah, they died before they got there.
If you're circulating the Earth, you're still under the Earth's influence, even if you're, you know, all you're doing is you're circulating the Earth at faster than the speed that you would normally plummet to the Earth. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit like someone having a string around an aeroplane and swinging it around. So you're doing the same thing with the people in the space station. But actually going away from the Earth's influence could be disastrous.
Yeah, so, I mean, what amazed me when I started looking through your website is the number of different conditions that people have found incredible benefits from raising the head of the bed bicycle.
Yeah, back to my son's broken wrist. He broke it the first year. Again, you know, a good break. Had a plastic cast on for 8 months. Took the plastic cast off. His muscles were all withered away. He had one very thin arm and one very, very strong arm. And the surgeon said that always happens when you have a plastic cast on. Okay, so a year later, he breaks the same wrist. But this time, he does an even better job. Now he's got two metal plates in and clean breaks through both bones. Has a plastic cast on for 8 weeks. Takes a plastic cast off. No muscle wastage. No need for physiotherapy. And the only difference was he was on a tilted bed the second time because it was around the time that I worked out what we should be doing. And instead of having his arm up in a sling, we had his arm down by his side. And I actually told him never to put his arm up in the sling. And when we got to have the metal plates removed, the surgeon at Torbay Hospital said, in the whole of his career, he'd never seen bone growth like it. In fact, he left one of the plates in because it had been completely overgrown with bone. In 8 weeks.
Yeah.
So, but my best case to date is a girl with cerebral palsy, 12 years of age. Mm-hmm. Parents rang me up and said, you got any bull terriers? I said, no, I'm sorry. She said, well, do you know anything about the breed? I said, anything you want to know. She said, what would an adult male be like around a severely disabled child? She says, what's the matter with your kid? She said, why do you want to know? I said, I might be able to help. She said, don't be bloody ridiculous. She said, I'm rang for a puppy. I said, well, I can't make you listen. She said, well, spit it out then. She was really terse. Londoner, yeah, well, there you go. Anyway, I told her and she started to cry. So her husband comes on the phone, gives me a round, yeah, and says, you've upset my wife. What have you been saying to my wife? And I heard her say in the background, I'll ask him to explain to you. So I have to go through it all the bloody game. Anyway, I told her, they tilted the kid's bed. And then the months went past. I was getting feedback saying, she's getting stronger. Now, cerebral palsy is brain damage from birth.
Yeah.
It doesn't get better, right, or shouldn't get better. She was 12 years of age, never walked. She wore calipers daytimes and nighttimes. To keep her legs straight. She had no muscles on her legs, but she was very articulate, so it only affected the main part of her brain. And, they were saying that, you know, after a few more months, she was turning over in bed, and then she was sitting up in bed, and it was just amazing. Oh, you know, I was really, really excited, and I wanted to get more people involved with CP, so I contacted the charities, hit the usual brick walls. Yeah. But anyway, the reports kept coming in. And the last report, which was fantastic, was we're just off down to the school, so the mother contacted me. This girl had got out of a wheelchair and walked, but not only walked, she managed to climb up a flight of stairs. I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, oh, my God. And what I was able to tell the mother before I tilted the bed was what had happened to people with spinal cord injury and multiple sclerosis. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd done a lot of work, and I was getting results. You know, I was getting guys work well. One guy couldn't move his armpits from his armpits down. I got his hands working. But anyway, back to the story. A few more months later, and this girl phoned me up. I picked up the phone. I wasn't even expecting anything. And I picked the phone up and I said, hello. I said, hello. He said, is this Andrew? I said, yes. She said, I'm the girl you've been helping with, you know, with the sloping bed. You know, I just want to say thank you for all you've done for me. And my legs went to jelly and I collapsed on the floor like a sack of spuds. I couldn't stand up.
That must be so rewarding, really.
Yeah. But I wanted to help other people with sudden infant death, with cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got a couple in the family that I wanted to help. And I asked the parents, pleaded with them if they'd make it public. No. Well, I can understand because it would have interfered with the girl's life, you know, that if you'd had the media all over him like a rash.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It would have gone the wrong way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I put a little advert in the paper. This was the early days. Mm. And I said, would anybody be interested in sleeping with the head of the bed raised 6 inches and a contact number? I didn't expect any replies. You know, it was a cheap little advert. But I got a lady called Ruby Tate contacted me. She said, oh, I've been sleeping on a bed for about 4 months now. She says, it's a miracle. I said, no, it ain't. It's science. She said, no, it's a miracle. I said, no, it's not. It's science because you can repeat it. She said, well, I've got osteoporosis, and that's brittle bone disease for anybody that doesn't know. And she said, for years, she said, I've been in agony with this terrible condition. For example, if I wanted to drive a car, I couldn't because I couldn't turn my head around to look in the mirrors. If I want to look up the clock, I have to turn my whole body around. She said, I can't turn over in bed. So I'm lying in the same position every night. And she said, but, you know, after a few weeks, she said all the pain had gone. And she said, I could turn over in bed with a few more weeks. And I was getting stronger and stronger. And then my neck freed up. I could turn my neck. You know, I could dress myself. I could put my own bra on. I could clothe myself. It's incredible. She said, it's a miracle. I said, no, it's science. And she said, can we come and meet you? Because my husband's got a subtuating scar, which he's had for most of his life, which is, you know, he has to keep bathing it, and it's weeping all the time, and it gets filled with pus. It's healed up.
Wow.
I'm thinking, wow, this. And that couple actually went on the local television to tell people what had happened to them. But, of course, they never got any feedback from the TV station, which I found strange because... You know, surely there's lots of people out there that would have had similar problems. Mm-hmm. But there's another story.
Before you go on, Andrew, I must just read you this from Lee in the chat room. He says, congratulations to Andrew for being a genius. And he also asks, is the degree of incline different? And have you experimented with different degrees, i.e. 10, 20, 30? And if so, any significant changes depending on the ailment or condition?
Psoriatic arthritis, which is psoriasis, but it eats into your joints, causes holes in your fingernails. So she's a nurse. And I went down to see this guy who was helping with a spinal cord injury, and she was looking after him in a guest house. And she told me about her condition. And she tilted the bed. Now, normally when she woke up in the morning, she tilted the bed by, you know, a larger degree. In fact, she sleeps on the north face of the Eiger at the moment, as best as I can explain. Yeah. And she finds that if she goes lower, she can start getting a return of the symptoms. So the 5-degree angle is not great for her, but it is great for, you know, it's excellent for most people. Right. But she normally wakes up in the morning and immerses her hands racked with pain in hot water. And she keeps them in hot water and keeps replacing the water for about an hour to get her hands working. Yeah. She's a hard lady, good friend of mine now. And she tilted the bed and she woke up the next morning. I can move my hands.
Wow, that's absolutely incredible.
It hasn't come back since. And all the psoriasis has gone from her body as well. And she no longer has holes in her fingernails.
Well, I've got a friend whose partner, she has real problems with psoriasis, so I hope they're listening. I hope it helps them as well.
Yes, yeah.
He certainly said he was going to have a listening tonight, so I hope you're listening.
So we got a kid with an enlarged dysfunction pituitary gland, which had occurred through an accident at the hospital. And the lady, the mother, had been told that not to expect any return of function. He was paralysed. So I met the lady that nurse I've just mentioned. It was at her birthday party. Mm-hmm. And this lady had got her hands on, and she's looking down at the table, shaking her head, and she's obviously in distress. So I went over and said, whatever's the matter? And she said, well, it's my son's had a problem, you know, and it's left him paralyzed, and he's going to be paralyzed for life. And I said, well, what's the condition? She said, he's got an enlarged dysfunction in pituitary gland. Now, the pituitary gland is very important in the brain. It drives most things. So when that's down, you're really scuppered. But she said, there's nothing that can be done, really. And I said, look, you know, and I told her all about my bed and how it helped people with Parkinson's disease and spinal cord injury and, you know, and the girl with cerebral palsy. And I said, look, you know, she said, you're not listening to me. There's nothing that can be done. I said, no, you're not listening to me. And I left it like that. Anyway, couple of years had passed, and I was at the same lady's birthday party at a hotel in Torquay, having a great time, and I was with my wife. And this lady come over, and she said, Well, she grabbed hold of me and gave me a big kiss and a hug, and she said, "It worked, it worked, it worked." I said, "Sorry, do I know you?" Because I'd forgotten who she was. And she said, "My son, you told me to tilt his back." I said, "Oh, it's come back to me now. That was a penis." She said, "Yeah, that's right." She said, "His arms are working, his hands are working, and his legs are working, and he's down the gym working out on weights."
Wow. Lee said, with his varying degrees, he said he's really interested in 30 degrees, and he's looking at it from a sky quadrant point of view. Three decans of 10 degrees each. Curious if anyone's experimented things.
I think the medical profession have used it as a test with reverse Trendelenburg, but only while you're in hospital to quickly tilt your bed and monitor what happens to you. But that's, you know, if you look in the literature, you'll find that information. But it's short term, and what we're dealing with here is the long term. So the consequences of having a greater incline is that you're going to create shear forces on your skin. So, you know, your body's trying to move down the mattress, but it's held back by the friction between yourself and the mattress. So the shear forces could end up causing you to have pressure sores. And if your feet come in contact with a footboard or the wall, then that's another source of pressure sores. So I would go with caution with experimenting with that kind of an angle. Mm-hmm. But if you do, I mean, I'd be really interested to learn how you get on.
Oh, fabulous. And I believe you did sort out an experiment that you'd like to invite our list to participate in.
Yeah, it's, you know, if anyone's getting a headache from listening to this, we might have the solution. migraines. The last one I had was in 1994. Now, the chances of migraines disappearing is pretty remote. Uh-huh. But I've also had reports from other people who suffer from migraines saying that they don't seem to be getting them anymore. So I would like to invite the listeners to take part in a simple experiment. Those of you that suffer with migraines, and these migraine headaches are terrible. You know, anybody that suffers with one, you can actually be sick. You can go blind temporarily. Awful things. No medication seems to touch them. So if you're interested in helping to test this, what I would ask you to do is to keep a journal. Now, I've set up the template on the forum at the website, again, inclinebedtherapy.com. So check out the forum and there's a template there. Delete all the instruction text, which I've coloured in red, and there's a template for your journal. So if you could monitor what happens, what you do is you download or copy and paste the text into your word processor. So you keep a copy on your hard drive. And then as you update the copy on your hard drive, revisit your online journal and post in your new journal. And so if you do that each time, we'll both have a copy. So if my website goes down, heaven forbid, we haven't lost the data, and I've lost some data in the past. But if your computer goes down, I've got a copy on the website. So, you know, if you could help me with this, it would be really great to test it.
That's brilliant, Andrew.
I think Andrew's invited me back, you know, at a later date, so we could see how people get on.
Yeah, that'd be fabulous. I've posted that link in the temporary chat room for anyone who's got access to that. And I'll just remind anyone who's listening and hasn't heard it, it's at podcaststorage.weebly.com. That's W-E-E-B-L-Y. Okay. Sorry for that, Andrew. Carry
That's
on.
Okay. What happens if we put semen in space, sperm? Well, NASA did it.
They died.
And they just swim around in circles. Oh. So they lose motility. So, you know, that suggests that sperm is required, it needs the direction of gravity in order to swim and the influence of gravity to drive its motility, which is very interesting. And I say this because a member of the family, IVF, and she'd spent a fortune on it with no joy, didn't work, and she'd done it a few times, and then the money ran out. So I said, "Tilt your bed." "Really? Yeah, tilt the bed." And I told her how to do it. They said, "What they got to lose?" Anyway, she conceived, not once, but twice. Now, did those little sperm need to know which way was up and which way was down?
Certainly to be something. Yeah.
It certainly does, yeah.
Another interesting one from Lee there. He said, "I've got a headache. I'm going to lie down." Why do people automatically retreat to a bed to lie down?
Well, if that bed was inclined, it would make a great deal of sense. Mm. People with multiple sclerosis, for example, have a condition called neuropathic pain. again, the medication doesn't seem to work for it. And yet the first guy that I tilted with MS found that before he tilted the bed, if he lay down, his neuropathic pain would get worse. So that was no option. But since the bed was tilted, he could retire to bed now and the pain would decrease.
Well, I mean, it absolutely, because my brother-in-law's, he's been suffering from it or been diagnosed with MS a couple of years ago now. And he's confined to a wheelchair now. Now, unfortunately, my sister is of the mindset that doctors know best. Whatever they tell you is gospel. It's like banging your head against a brick wall trying to tell her something different. So I will pass the information on. Whether she'll look at it, I don't know.
Well, I've done a tremendous amount of research. Mm-hmm. Two pilot studies with MS involving, you know, the second was involving large numbers. Mm-hmm. The first was involving 11 patients with MS and two patients with spinal cord injury. And the results were incredible. You know, I had two ladies regain their eyesight and they had optic nerve damage, caused through long-term progressive MS. And two ophthalmologists wrote to me and said, can you explain to me how putting two blocks of wood under somebody's bed can restore their eyesight? But we had people getting out of wheelchairs, people abandoning walking, throwing away walking sticks. Incredible. And in fact, the Multiple Sclerosis Resource Centre, they've changed the name now. I think they have Multiple Sclerosis UK or something like that. They sent the chief exec down there, which was John Simpkins and his wife Jean Simpkins. She went round and interviewed these patients with MS and they compiled a report. And the report is on the website. It's called Raised Bed Survey. Now, when you read through that, because John Simpkins admitted that he'd softened the results because they were looking too incredible that no one would believe them. Yeah, but, you know, to doctor the results, you shouldn't do that. But he did that. But nevertheless, his report was absolutely staggering. You know, it shows the way forward. And in fact, I've recently done a talk at a local MS centre in Exeter and got more people to test it. But we have a lady called Terry Harrison, and she's been on a previous interview, and she came on to tell us that, you know, 18 years ago she had MS and today she doesn't, and the neurologist has sacked himself.
Wow. I mean, the one that really amazed me was that the blonde lady who was on one of the interviews that was on your site, the American lady, who she'd been diagnosed, her pain started to get worse, and they diagnosed her with buckets of drugs, which she didn't want to take, and then she found you.
Yes, that's Terry.
Oh, that's Terry, yeah. And, yeah she... but apparently her husband didn't like the sleeping in the inclined bed, so she said, there's the couch.
Yeah. Great, yeah. That's the problem as well, because, you know, we've all got... Most of us have got partners, and, you know, you can get a conflict of interest. So, you know, it's a problem. But if, you know, if you can get your partner to watch the... You know, or listen to the podcast from this show, then you'll be able to understand as well. She'll be able to understand as well. And you'll see the logic in both of you avoiding a flatbed.
Mm-hmm. From what I understand, from what you've told us so far, it's not just sick people that are going to benefit from.
Not at all. No, I've got a boxer called Tony Moran, and he had a collision with a hard object while he was fighting in the ring, and it caused him to have a fractured skull. They said his career was over, but his first fight back, and I think he's 42 years of age. Good on you, Tony.
Wow.
And he won his first fight, and now he's fighting again on the 12th of September.
Brilliant. Oh, well, good luck, Tony.
But he said his fitness is feeling like he's 25. You know, he said my fitness is incredible. Of course, Clive DeCarl has been helping him as well with some mineral supplements and that, but I suspect that inclined bed is doing a great deal.
Funny you should mention that, because I just saw about 20 seconds ago, Clive just tuned into Skype. So.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it just flashed up on my screen there.
Yeah. So, you know, it all started because of buying a 20 pence GCSE biology book by D.G. McCain. And we've all used them at school.
Yeah.
And the biology book cost me 20p. And as I started to read through it, I could sense that the author, McCain, didn't agree with the explanations in the biology book. And this got my back up. You know, I thought, well, these kids are being fed this. and the author doesn't believe it. So that's what fired me up, you know. So I gave it my best shot, and you know, it took me a long time to solve this problem, 20 minutes.
Oh wow!
That's how long it took me. 20 minutes after reading that biology book and saying, "What a load of crap!" It took me 20 minutes to work out what was really happening. You see, the scientists were saying, "How do trees raise water from the ground to the leaves?" When really they should have been saying, "How do trees circulate sap?" If they'd have said that, the answer would have been so obvious. But they asked the wrong question.
Yeah. Oh God, Lee is really throwing that as well. Throwing the questions at us tonight. He said MS is a problem with cholesterol production and myelin sheathing in the neurons and pathways. I wouldn't give statins to MS sufferers. And also he said it's funny, when he goes to his parents up north, if he tries to sleep in an east-west orientation, he can't sleep. If he goes to north-south, as his bed is aligned at home, he sleeps like a baby. He's found that three times since he moved to Brighton, and moved home three times while I was here, had the same problem. Which way the bed and I were pointing?
Yes, head end north?
I don't know. He didn't say north-south.
Okay, so there was a story about a very noisy ward. It was a baby ward where all the babies were screaming, and nobody understood why. So a new midwife come in, turned all the beds round, and they all went quiet.
It just amazes me how such simple thing, and I mean, so often simple things are totally ignored because they don't cost anything, and they're so simple. People think, well, it's so simple that can't possibly do any good. But you know, drinking water and eating foods are fairly simple, but kind of keeps you alive.
Yeah, well, they keep putting that balance around. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true.
Yes.
And that's a classic fob-off by the medical profession, again, and the drug company. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there are so many people out there that have, you know, a great deal of knowledge and are helping a lot of people. And, you know, like me, they're getting nowhere with the medical profession. They're getting nowhere. If you take Parkinson's disease, for example, a patient with Parkinson's disease, if they lie down on the night time and get up in the morning, then in the early stages, they end up with morning paralysis. Perhaps they shouldn't be lying down. What happens next is that the partner or the carer throws the legs over the side of the bed and gets them sitting up. They come round a little bit, and they get them to stand up, and they come round a little bit more. Then they get them to shuffle around with that Parkinson shuffle, and they come round a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And then by the end of the day, they're walking around like me and you, and then they go back to bed and screw it all up again. Oh, it's the bed. So I had a guy over in Torquay, and what I used to do in the old days, I used to go and use the computer at Torbay Hospital, for which I'm very grateful. This was before we had the internet, and I used to get access to all of the clinical trials so that I could do a tremendous amount of research. And one of the ladies there said, "Would you mind having a word with my friend? Her husband's got Parkinson's. Do you think it could help?" I said, "Well, you know, from what I've been reading about it, it's, you know, it could well help." Anyway, I went round to see the guy, and he was his attention span was about a minute, you know, possibly a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And then he'd be out to sleep, and then he'd come round again, and then he'd have another little bit of a conversation. His face was like in a fixed, they call it the Parkinson's mask. So he'd lost a lot of his features and his facial expressions. His body was severely swollen, massive, massive swollen body. I encouraged him to tilt the bed. He couldn't walk, you know. I mean, his wife, bless her, was doing her best to support him, and he had to help getting up the chairs by a stair lift, up the stairs, yeah. And a few weeks later, I was getting phone calls saying, "I'm frantic. I'm at my wit's end. His non-stop urination is just, you know, he keeps urinating. He keeps having to go to the bathroom, has wet the bed a few times. But all that was the circulation had changed. So now the edema, which was swelling his body, was being pulled back into the venous return and back into the back through the bladder, and then excreted in the urine. So what we were seeing there was a massive change in the amount of fluid he was carrying, so much so that his clothes literally fell on the floor. Yeah. But he kept improving and improving, and he was beginning to walk better. He was talking better, and as his wife noticed on one of the nights, she turned over to see her husband, and that Parkinson's mask had vanished. She could see his facial expression, so she woke him up, and she had a long conversation with him, which was incredible. Then I got told. Well, actually, I went over to see him because I couldn't believe what I was being told. But I didn't announce the fact that I was going over. I knocked on the door, and who should open the door but this guy? Uh-huh. And I said, "Hi." I said, "I'm Andrew." He said, "I know who you are." I said, "You've come to see the wife." Well, he did mention her by name, but I'll try and keep her name out of it. I said, "Yes." He says, "Hang on a minute, I'll go and fetch her." And he walked up the bloody stairs. His stairlift was by the side of him. So he walked up the stairs and gave his missus a shout and turned round and come back down the stairs. Wow, that's incredible. But he sat in the lounge and we had a good old conversation. And he was a plumber, so we had a bit of a talk about his career and plumbing. And because he was a plumber, he understood the theory behind it as well. And I went back home when I was just over the moon with what had happened. And, of course, the first thing you do is try and get more people with Parkinson's on board. Mm-hmm. But that's very difficult because, again, as you explained, it's too simple. It can't be true, yeah. But it is bloody true. So the next call I had was interesting. He took himself for a walk down to see his grandkids playing at the school park or the school fields, playing fields, and then brought himself back a few times. I thought, wow, that's incredible. And more importantly, he walked with a normal gait, so he'd lost the Parkinson's shuffle. But he started to go downhill. It started to go bad, and he started to develop erratic behaviour. You know, if he got hold of a pillar and he started to rip the pillar up and he couldn't stop himself. And I remember seeing a film called The Sleepers, and it was about people in a catatonic state. And I remember they were experimenting with levodopa or L-dopamine, and which is the same drug they give to Parkinson's patients. And they were increasing the dose, and he was developing this same erratic behaviour. But he managed to pull them out of the catatonic state, which means that they've been in the same position for 20 or 30 years, you know, that they look like lost in time. And when they come round, it was as if they'd just woke up, and some of them thought they were like 14 or 15 years of age.
Wow.
But I used what I'd learned off that movie and said, you know, I think it's the amount of insulin he's having. For some reason, he's either producing his own insulin or the insulin he's taking is becoming more effective. Mm-hmm. So they reduced the insulin by half, and his erratic behaviour vanished. And I thought, wow, we're onto something here. Anyway, the next time I rang, she was really worried. The bugger had got in his car and gone for a drive in it.
Yeah, oh, amazing.
Incredible. But again, he started to get the erratic behaviour back again. So they reduced the drug again, and the erratic behaviour had stopped. So either he's producing his own insulin or, you know, the body's making better use of the insulin that they're using, but I think that it had actually stimulated its own production. And if that is the case, this in itself needs investigating. But alas, the Parkinson's Disease Society, when I tried to get them on board, they wouldn't have nothing to do with me again. So I thought, oh, I'll be sneaky here and I'll contact the local offices, you know, all of the branches around the country and see if I can get somebody to take it on board. But they'd written to all of these branches asking them to have nothing to do with me. And one guy got back in touch with me and said he actually agreed with what I was saying and he couldn't understand why they'd taken this stance. Yeah, so me and charities don't mesh very well.
Yes, well, yeah. The trouble is with charities, you've got to look at the people behind them that are funded.
It's big business. It's big business, yeah. I mean, look at what happens to the most of the funds. It seems to be used up in, you know, buying brand new cars and bigger buildings and bigger houses and looking after the people at the top.
Yeah.
And the trickle-down effect doesn't happen. You know, they get, what is it, three or four pence in the pound, if they're lucky.
Some of them less than that, I think.
Yeah. Sad state of the thing. You know, I would say that they're a bunch of crooks.
Yeah, I would say that's no too strong a term, yeah, absolutely. I mean, nowadays, I've found it very hard not to really fly off the handle when I get a charity tin waved in my face. I just like, thank you. And sometimes I do try and explain things to people, but they don't always take it terribly well. I mean, a lot of these people that are out, the foot soldiers of the charity, are incredibly well-intentioned people. It's just the people who are pulling the strings, same as in the health service, same as in every other branch of our overarching leadership was that came to mind, but it's not really. The people who control us, they really haven't got our best intentions at heart.
Of course they're not. You know, if the election worked, would they give it us?
Well, it's been explained to me that what we have, participatory. So we're allowed to participate. What we would actually do as good would be representative democracy. No, we ain't going to get that anytime soon.
No. As you mentioned, would people without an illness benefit? Well, of course they would, because they'll be avoiding the flatbed, which ages them and causes all sorts of problems. But not only that, when you're inclined, it seems to give your energy levels a boost. And I've heard now that some of the sports people have used the inclined bed now to boost the performance without the drugs. So, yeah, it would help. You know, well, I'm sure that weightlifters would lift more weights, heavier weights.
I'm just thinking, do you really need me for the rest of the program? Because I'm quite looking forward to going to bed. I think I might go soon.
It's to me, it's just illogical. You know, to retire to a flat bed, it just seems so alien. And in fact, when we've done it, when we've slept flat, like I visited my wife's sister for 2 days in the Midlands a few weeks back, and I got bloody cold. I got a terrible cold sleeping on a flat bed up there, and it was awful. And in fact, if you've been lying on an incline for a good many weeks, and then you lie flat on the floor, it's really weird because your head actually feels like it's going down through the floor. Wow. So you actually feel like you're sliding down under the ground. It's really bizarre.
I'm really looking forward to trying it. And I need to get some more timber to do the full sixes. But do you start to feel the benefits of it on the 3-inch tilt?
Yes, you will. Oh, yes, but nowhere near the full incline. Right, but you'll definitely feel some changes. Yeah. Animals, you know, no one's started to study why animal or how animals sleep. You know, there are animals that sleep on the hoof, sleep standing up. In fact, there's some tribes in Africa that sleep standing up.
Really?
Yeah. They use a stick and they perch on the stick. And I think they do it because there's parasites in the soil.
So
they don't want to lay down and put the head down near the ground. But they're very fit people. Of course, the animals, you know, if we study how animals sleep, you know, take the primates, chimpanzees will make nests in branches of trees. Those are not flat. Gorillas will sleep leaning up against the tree. That's not flat. Alligators and crocodiles will sleep. Lizards control their body temperature by either facing down to lower the body temperature or facing up to raise the body temperature. So those pretty low intelligence animals seem to have got the edge on us.
So often is the case, yeah.
A snake, or you know, it can't strike from ground level. Mm. It has to raise itself up to build the power up to strike. Yeah, so it's using gravity. Gravity is the key ingredient. Cattle and sheep, you know, bless them. If there's a hillside in there, you know, they're laying down, every one of them will be facing up the hill.
Since I've come across your website, we've got a field across the road where there's some cows in it, and I've noticed that is absolute. It appears there was an old monastery there many years ago, and it's like a moat round it. And they lie in the side of the moat with a head at the top. So, yeah, absolutely, I can bear that out.
But they're not doing that for predation, are they? They're not in fear of predation, because if they were, they'd be looking down the hill to see what's coming up after them.
So,
if we take the stallion, you know, the stallion with its looking after the, do you call it a herd with horses? Herd of horses? Yeah, you do. Well, so the stallion's looking after its herd, and that stallion doesn't sleep, and it becomes so muscular and so powerful. You know, it rules the roost. Yeah. And then the other upcoming stallions haven't got a chance because they're all taking it easy with the mares. Yeah. So, you know, he's avoiding lying down. And in fact, I studied a condition called laminitis. And they say, oh, yeah, we always know when a horse has got laminitis because it lays down a lot. Well, I said, well, hang on. Could it be laying down a lot that causes the laminitis?
Well, I thought a lot of horses sleep standing up.
Sorry?
I thought a lot of horses sleep standing up. Is it just the stallion?
No, you do get quite a few horses sleeping standing up, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you also get quite a few lying down.
Ah, right.
You'll find them in the fields lying down. But I reckon those that lie down for prolonged periods suffer the same fate that we do if we lie down in our beds for prolonged periods.
Right.
You know, what they say, oh, you need a good night's rest. Go and get your head down. Send your kids off to bed at 7 o'clock.
Wow. I mean, it's the same in so many aspects of our lives. When you start to question, why do we do this? Well, stupid question. It's because we've always done it. That's what people do.
Yes.
And you've been told you're an idiot for questioning that, but now I'm just questioning so much about what we're told, what are established practices and procedures. Some of them, and particularly this one with the information that you've given, doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. One other condition that might interest your listeners, and if any of you have got this condition, this works. And the condition is cirrhosis of the liver with drinking. You know, I've seen people with yellow skin, and I've seen them tilt the beds, and I've watched that colour change. You know, that can only mean one thing, that the liver is actually repairing itself and functioning better. Wow. And nowhere was this demonstrated more than when my father was dying with pancreatic cancer in the hospital in Russell's Hall. And we were told that he had hours to live, very rude doctor. And shouted it out. He says, "You do realise your father's dying, don't you? In a ward filled with cancer patients." Yeah, you know. And again, bless me, I didn't punch his lights out. You know, if I'd have been a bit younger, I probably would have done. But I fought tooth and nail to have his bed tilted. He had his liver had packed up, so his skin was very yellow. His eyes were yellow. His kidneys had stopped functioning. He was peeing out bloody urine, which was like tar rather than clean urine. He had multiple organ failure, they called it. He was in a coma, and his legs were massive. They had to cut his pyjamas, and I tried to lift one of my dad's legs up, and they were so swollen. But I lost my rag with him, and then sat by his bed and made sure his bed stayed up. Mm. And within hours, his urine started to run yellow again. And his legs started to go down.
Wow.
All the fluid was disappearing from his legs. In a few more hours, he come out of his coma. And he eventually came home and had another 8 months of life. And that was pancreatic cancer. That's the worst cancer you can get. He had 8 months extra life.
Yeah, I know.
I tried to get my dad to change his diet, but my dad ain't going to listen to me, is he?
Yeah.
He's still doing the bacon sandwiches and still drinking his whiskey and, you know, all the wrong things. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it got him in the end, but he had an holiday down here in Devon with us. You know, I mean, that meant a great deal to us.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. But, you know, the doctor was astounded, and he said, you must come and talk, you know, give a talk to us here at the hospital. You know, because what we've seen here is just incredible.
Mm.
And that talk never happened, even though I rang up and said, you know, I'll come up at the drop of a hat to give a talk. It never happened. Why? Why didn't, you know, I don't understand. You know, that's my own dad.
Oh.
Yeah, he had leg ulcers for 25 years. He was a window cleaner. And he had five. At one point, and we tilted his bed, and his leg ulcers healed up, but they all broke out again when he went into the hospital. You know, so there's another condition, leg ulcers. So we've got varicose veins, leg ulcers, edema, even gangrene has responded. I met a guy down in Paignton Town Centre, and he got this big whooping bandage on his foot. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Whatever's the matter with you?" And he said, "Oh, I've got gangrene." I said, "Well," and I told him about what I'd been doing. We sat on the... This really annoys the missus, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
She's heard it so many bloody times. So I sat down and talked to him, and he went back home, and he tilted his bed. And his surgeon was shocked because he'd cut most of the flesh off his foot. But the flesh was actually forming back around the bones. You know, it restored circulation. Because that's all gangrene is your circulation's packed up.
The flesh dies.
Yeah. Diabetes, you know, we got... Again, you know, gangrene with diabetes. But I've always said that, you know, most of these amputations in hospitals could be avoided if they tilted the beds, because you maintain the circulation of the feet, the toes and the fingers. So, you know, that alone is you're gonna help these people. But it went a lot further than that, because this guy contacted me, a guy called Tateki Yeating from Pompeii Island, which is sort of northeast of Australia. And he said, I'd like to help you conduct a study into diabetes. He says, we've got horrendous problems since the American diet has been introduced to the islands. We didn't have any problems before we went on that diet.
Yeah.
And he said, we've got chronic obesity. He says, and most of the people on the island are either got diabetes or they're getting diabetes. So they tilted 11 patients' beds, and they conducted a study with the help of the government and the local college and the hospital in Pompeii. Mm-hmm. And they recorded that the sugar levels had dropped on all of these patients. But two of the patients, which was really interesting, was they went in the opposite direction. They actually went up. So Tateki, bless him, he said, I'm going to go around and find out what's going on here. What he found was these two people hadn't been sleeping on an inclined bed. One had been off binging out at a wedding for 2 days, drinking lots and eating lots of the wrong food. Mm-hmm. And the other one had done the same, but at a funeral for 2 days. Yeah. So once that had been corrected, then their sugar levels come down as well. And he actually completed a paper and then sent it into, or took it into, what's the place in America? My brain's gone dead. Begins with a W, the main place.
Washington.
Yeah. Washington, D.C. Took the study results into Washington, D.C., and it's been shelved.
Surprising.
I've contacted the Diabetes Society. Don't have nothing to do with it. Never replied. Yeah.
And that is such a massively growing problem today.
Yes. Mm. Yes, it is.
I've got another question for you in the chat. Has this incline been tested on people who suffer from lymphedema, brackets, fluid gathers in the lower limbs of a lymph gland?
Yes, and with success as well. But also, if you question, now that's interesting, because he's mentioned the lymphatic system, and we've only talked about blood circulation. Mm. But of course, we've got cerebrospinal fluid circulation as well. And they've recently discovered that the brain has its own lymphatic drain system. So that's only been discovered this year.
Wow.
Up until that point, the brain was, it didn't have a draining mechanism. So if we think, how does the fluid circulate in the lymphatic system? It's not driven by the heart. And we know that respiration plays a role. And we know that posture plays a role. Because if you stand up, you can stimulate the circulation in the lymphatic system. Therefore, if you lie down flat, you're going to compromise the circulatory system. So gravity then, if you're lying down flat, is acting on those, because the lymphatic system carries away waste. Yeah. So if gravity is now running perpendicular to the lymphatic vessels, it's still acting on those density changes, but it's actually acting on them as a brake. It's slowing the circulation down. So that leads on then to a buildup of fluids. You know, because you're compromising the circulation, it's not working properly. So you're not getting rid of the waste. So you're going to get a buildup of waste, and that's going to increase the pressure. So that's going to lead to fluid seeping out in the same as the problem with edema with the vascular system. You're going to get the lymphatic system working the same way. So if we tilt the bed, yes, we can certainly lower the pressures in the vascular system, in the lymphatic system, but also the cerebrospinal fluid. I asked a guy, he's a senior spinal cord surgeon, and asked him on his own forum, how does the circulation work in the cerebrospinal fluid? I said, I don't want to know where it flows from and where it flows to. We all understand that from the books.
Yeah.
So what's the driving force? He couldn't answer me. I thought, that's a bit worrying for someone who operates on your spine. Yeah.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and it's not his fault, because it's the same problem we have with trees. Nobody understands how the trees circulate sap any more than they understand how the lymphatic circulates and how the lymphatic system circulates and how the cerebrospinal fluid circulates.
So what they tend to do is tell us a bunch of stories, children, which we believe as we get older, because that's what we're taught at school. You know, the story with the capillary action. I mean, we did the capillary action experiments, chemistry and biology at school.
Yes, yes.
But clearly you've demonstrated that's not the case. So.
Well, no, it isn't, because capillary action would be a very, very slow process.
Yeah.
The treatment circulate hundreds of gallons in some cases in a day, you know, so you've got to have a bulk flow system, and no capillary action explanation could even address that. There is a new kid on the block. It's called the cohesion tension theory, and that is absolutely incredible, that somebody could have thought that leaves can generate some kind of lift to drag water up a Californian redwood over 100 metres tall. It's absurd that they would expect someone to believe that is actually possible. Mm. You know, if you've got holes in leaves, which you have, yeah, and pores, and you're trying to suck water 100 metres through these leaves, you're going to suck air in through the leaves, aren't you? You're not going to suck fluid up 100 metres, are you? Even if it was hypothetically possible. Yeah. You know, if you've got a straw stretched 100 metres, you'd have a hell of a game sucking water up that straw more than 10 metres. You would have it. Well, you wouldn't be able to do it.
Well, the straw would collapse.
You wouldn't be able to go up 10 metres because there's a law that states there's a 10-metre limit. And that was down to Galileo and Torricelli, who were invited to solve a problem for the Grand Duke of York in Tuscany. He had a well that was sunk 40 metres deep. And, it was 12 metres deep. And they needed, or 13 metres deep somewhere. I forget the exact formula. But they had to overhaul this pump and get it to pump water more than 10 metres, and they couldn't solve the problem. So that gave root to this rule. So anyway, if you're trying to suck water up a straw and somebody pokes holes in it, you aren't hiding to nothing, aren't you? And that's exactly what the leaves are.
Absolutely.
It's leaves with holes in. And I've seen some pretty amazing trees, mainly larch, tall, thin, slender stems going right up, you know, way up in the air, and just a bunch of small leaves on the top.
Yeah.
And they're capable of dragging water up to the... Don't make me laugh. Don't make me laugh. And certainly don't teach these kids this rubbish.
Andrew, I'd really like to thank you for coming on tonight. It's been a real education, and I hope some of the benefits of what you've discovered will be passed on to the listeners. I'm sure, no doubt, some will try it. Have you got any links you'd like to give out to our listeners, how they can get in touch with you, where your website are, Facebook, that sort of...
We have a thriving group on Facebook and a page under the title Incline Bed Therapy, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a website, inclinebedtherapy.com, and that's all you need to know. I do have two YouTube accounts as well with videos on. But if you type in Andrew K. Fletcher, you should hit most of the targets. Make sure you put the K in the middle. But the most important thing to me is, and thank you very much, Steve, Andy, for letting me on, is feedback. I need your feedback. You know, I can't do this alone. I really need some help with this. So, you know, if you fancy taking some photographs of your varicose veins and your edema or your black toe or your broken arm, and stick your bed on an angle and then take some more photographs, that would be a great help. We don't have to use your name, you know, so if you're a bit shy. There's a testimonials page as well. So, you know, if you find it has worked and it has helped you, share what it's done for you, and then other people can find out about it.
You'll certainly be getting my feedback, Andrew. Thank you ever so much for coming on, and I hope you'll come back and join us again soon. And it's about time to go, so I'm going to play out with a song from somebody who I know is in the chat room tonight. And stay tuned for Martin Farrell. And this is a tune from Ken Pearson. Thank you very much, Andrew, and good night, everyone.
You're welcome.
I intend to bail it, but I did not hit no policeman. Oh, no. I said, I intend to bail it, but I didn't hit no policeman. Self-defense. I in the bailiff. Oh, and say it is a violent offence. Bailiff man always hated me. He wants to make me go. When I ask for the warrant, he just smirks.
That bailiff, but that policeman